Hello there and welcome. Today is Thursday, April the 20th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Lori London in Washington. Coming up, the White House orders a review of the Iran nuclear deal.
Iran's nuclear ambitions are a grave risk to international peace and security.
Democrats are hoping a special election shows Republicans are vulnerable. A new TV series about the fascinating life of Albert Einstein.
How can something light travel through nothing? Space.
Also ahead, marijuana advocates in the U.S. are planning an event in Washington later today. It's all on today's International Edition. President Donald Trump has directed the National Security Council to review the 2015 international agreement on Iran's nuclear program and to evaluate whether suspending sanctions is vital to the national security interests of the United States. At the State Department Wednesday, Secretary of State Rex Tillerson said the administration is conducting a comprehensive 90-day review of its Iran policy across the entire U.S. government. He said this review must address all the threats posed by Iran.
Iran is the world's leading state sponsor of terrorism and is responsible for intensifying multiple conflicts and undermining U.S. interest in countries such as Syria, Yemen, Iraq, and Lebanon, and continuing to support attacks against Israel. An unchecked Iran has the potential to travel the same path as North Korea and take the world along with it. The United States is keen to avoid a second piece of evidence that strategic patience is a failed approach. A comprehensive Iran policy requires that we address all of the threats posed by Iran, and it is clear there are many.
VOA's Victor Beatty asks Jonathan Adelman, professor of international relations at the University of Denver, for his view on this new approach to dealing with Iran.
Well, I think it's long overdue. I think it's something to be applauded. The previous administration really let Iran get away with a lot of things. Now the situation is quite serious because those states that you just said mean that they have created a Shiite arc which goes all the way from Iran all the way to the Mediterranean. And so this is dangerous because they keep saying at every rally on Friday morning, death to America, death to Israel. And so the result is that we now have to face a difficult situation because we do have an international treaty that we agreed to, but they're breaking it, and they've broken it very often. So for America, it's not just North Korea is the problem. Iran is also a problem.
So you're saying they're breaking the agreement?
They're breaking something that's more important than the agreement, which is primarily about nuclear capability. They are out to literally reconquer a significant portion of the Middle East. And given their deep hostility to the United States, to democracy, to capitalism, and so forth, this has helped lead to the situation that we're now facing in the Middle East, where their forces are helping to win the battle for Islamic fundamentalism. So that's a core problem.
Tillerson said one of the mistakes in the way the agreement was put together was that it ignored all the other serious threats that Tehran posed outside of its nuclear program. Quote, "That is why we have to look at Iran in a very comprehensive way in terms of the threat it poses in all areas of the region and the world."
And there's no question to that. Iran has been named repeatedly by international observers, you know, the number one supporter of international terrorism. And, for example, I was in Buenos Aires for the State Department a couple years ago, and there was the Jewish Community Center that they'd blown up and the Israeli embassy that they had blown up. And so it's quite serious. And it wasn't terribly well recognized, but it's very problematic because we have this international treaty dealing with nuclear weapons, and it also doesn't provide for thorough inspection of what the Iranians are doing. So it's a real problem for this administration.
The European Union's foreign policy chief last month, after meetings with senior Trump administration officials, said she was reassured that the U.S. was committed to fully implementing this Iran nuclear deal. Is she wrong?
She's not wrong technically, but what the administration is going to do, it probably will maintain aspects of the deal, but to point to the areas in which there's deep suspicion that the Iranians are breaking the deal. and therefore that would give some grounds. But there's a problem also between the United States and the Europeans. The Europeans seem to be relatively uninterested in doing very much about Iran. The Americans have woken up to the fact that the United States has been the dominant force in the Middle East, and all of a sudden, this is the explanation for why we saw Donald Trump meeting with al-Sisi, the head of Egypt. We saw him meeting with King Abdullah II of Jordan and also the deputy prime minister from Saudi Arabia, because they're terrified. And they now are turning to the United States. And this is a critical moment, whether we're going to let Iran continue. And if so, as you've already indicated, it's problematic. Well, what are we actually going to do at this point? That's a hard question to answer.
That's Jonathan Edelman, professor of international relations at the University of Denver. Here are some of the stories we are following at voanews.com. Russia blocks a Security Council statement on North Korea. Italy warns of a measles epidemic amid a debate about vaccines. Native Americans are most at risk from the impact of climate change. And Prince's estate seeks to stop the release of new music. Find expanded coverage of these stories and more at voanews.com and on our VOA mobile app. This is International Edition. Democrats claimed a partial victory early in the Trump presidency Tuesday as candidate John Ossoff advanced to a June runoff election for the Georgia congressional seat vacated by Health and Human Services Secretary Tom Price. Activists and party donors still hurting from the 2016 election loss saw an opportunity in this heavily Republican district that Trump won by only 1 point. VOA's Catherine Gibson traveled to Georgia in the final days before the election to learn more about the national stakes in this race.
Democrats declared victory in a high-stakes election watched as far as the White House.
We are changing the world. And your voices are going to ring out across this state and across this country.
Change started in these suburban neighborhoods, helped along by an extraordinary $8.3 million fundraising haul and an army of volunteers looking for an opportunity to beat Trump even though he wasn't on the ballot.
We've got progressive people very worried and angry about Trump's policies, and this is the only race that's on the national stage right now.
Democratic activists like Cox see their work here in the Georgia 6 as a possible blueprint for 2018 midterm elections across the country, using an anti-Trump backlash to win back control of Congress. But Trump declared a runoff a win for Republicans, saying his support on Twitter as polls opened Tuesday and a last-minute recorded call appealing to voters.
Only you can stop the super liberal Democrats.
Made a difference as Ossoff failed to secure the majority needed for an outright win. The crowded Republican field is now narrowed to just one. Moderate Republican Karen Handel, heavily favored to win this district that hasn't sent a Democrat to Congress since the 1970s. And now that the choice is down to Handel, expect President Trump to rally Republican voters with a trip down to Georgia.
Donald Trump coming to town could be the biggest thing to happen in congressional elections in years.
The prize is just one seat out of 435, but each side has too much at stake to risk a loss. Catherine Gibson, VOA News, Roswell, Georgia.
Well, every year on April 20th, marijuana users in the United States show civil disobedience and light up in public at exactly 4:20 in the afternoon. 4:20 is a term that pot smokers use to identify their shared interest. Well, today in the nation's capital, the advocacy organization that spearheaded an initiative which legalized cannabis in Washington, D.C., will be holding an event they're calling the first annual Congressional Joint Session. Now, participants will be giving away marijuana and calling on Congress to reauthorize an amendment which prohibits the federal government from interfering with state medical marijuana laws. This, as West Virginia Wednesday became the 29th state in the U.S. to allow the use of medical marijuana. It's legal for recreational purposes in 8 states. Joining me now is healthcare attorney Aaron LaChant. Thank you for being with us to analyze this. What do you think the impact has been of states legalizing marijuana?
There's been a lot of tax revenue raised in the various states and cities which have opted to legalize this activity, as well as a decrease in drug-related prosecution, as a lot of these jurisdictions view marijuana possession for personal use as a very minor defense, which shouldn't a very minor offense, which shouldn't be illegal.
So the impact would definitely be that there's less incarceration rates.
Less incarceration rates, and there is development of these thriving marijuana businesses, which ironically enough, aside from creating jobs and taxation revenue, they create other businesses in the overall local economy.
Give me an example.
Well, in Los Angeles, we've seen areas where a legal marijuana dispensary will locate in a blighted area. And once the marijuana dispensary locates there and the foot traffic develops, a whole local business ecosystem develops around it. You'll see a coffee shop open up nearby, and you'll start to see restaurants open up nearby because those folks want to capitalize on all the foot traffic that's generated from the marijuana business. And it turns out these areas actually turn out to be great places to do business because they get increased police patrols because the cops are so concerned about maintaining the peace and safety with the marijuana business nearby.
So California now, that's the largest state that has it passed Proposition 64, which legalized marijuana for recreational use. Do you think a lot of other states are going to follow that trend to go beyond legalizing marijuana for medicinal purposes, but actually for recreational?
You know, there's the old saying that as goes California, so goes the rest of the country. But I think we're going to see a little bit of a pause on the marijuana issue due to the federal prohibition and the uncertainty coming from the Department of Justice as to how they're going to treat these non-medical marijuana businesses. I think we're going to see a lot of states sit on the sidelines and kind of see how things shake out with Washington, Colorado, and California.
With more states legalizing recreational marijuana, do you think there's been an impact on the medicinal marijuana trade?
States such as Colorado and Washington, the non-medical marijuana businesses have eclipsed the medical marijuana businesses as far as their popularity and where patients and customers go to get their marijuana. From a practical standpoint, to be a medical marijuana patient, you have to see a doctor. There's a cost associated with that. You have to get your medical marijuana card, possibly from the state. There's another cost associated with that. It gets to a point where it's much easier and cheaper to the medical marijuana patient just to go to the recreational shop. And unless the tax savings is big enough between purchasing medical versus purchasing non-medical, patients are just going to go where it's cheaper.
What about the underground market, illegally sold marijuana? Is that impacted by more states legalizing?
The black market, the unregulated market, is always going to be there. The biggest challenge facing regulators right now is finding that sweet spot where they can tax the marijuana activity and tax the sales, but not tax it so much that it sends people to the unregulated market where it can be 30% cheaper. I think in places like Colorado, the underground market is still thriving because regulators haven't been able to find that sweet spot for taxation. Right now, it's probably overtaxed, and a large number of people still purchase their marijuana from the unregulated market.
All right. Well, we should add that states that have legalized medical or recreational marijuana have banned public consumption, but those rules are often ignored on April 20th. You're listening to International Edition on VOA.
Hi, I'm Nikki Strong. You love music? How about Blake Shelton and Carrie Underwood? Or Merle Haggard and Loretta Lynn? Experience the best in country music on Country Hits USA. I bring you some country rock, outlaw, a little hillbilly, contemporary, and more, with a dash of entertainment news, too. So join me for Country Hits USA on VOA 1, the voice of America.
News is mobile, and so are you. Get VOA on the go. Get VOA on Google Currents. Get VOA News specifically made for your tablet and smartphone. Clean, simple, fast. Now available for Android or Apple phones or tablets. Download the Google Currents app for free today. Get VOA on Google Currents at voanews.com/currents.
VOA's International Edition continues now. Coming up, social media buzz on Starbucks' latest craze, but first, a look at what's happening in the world of entertainment. We're joined by Nicole Moschella, content editor for Rare.us. Nicole, Richard Simmons, he's famous in the U.S. for his quirky way to get people to exercise. He hasn't been heard from in a while. Reports are that he's been ill?
Yeah, so he has been hospitalized this week. He actually hasn't been seen in public in the last 3 years. So there's been a lot of speculation about where he has been. There was a whole podcast over here called Missing Richard Simmons that kind of did a deep dive into where he could be. But he was hospitalized this week he was having some discomfort after eating, some stomach issues. His people took him to the hospital. His longtime rep, Michael Cantalino, says that he's doing just fine now. He will make a full recovery. And he actually released a statement on Facebook and thanked his fans for well wishes and the get well soons and all of that. And he said, "Don't worry, you guys, I'm not missing. I'm just taking some time to myself." So I guess he's on the up and up, and he'll be back, and maybe we'll see him in public again soon.
Absolutely. And then we've got some exciting news in the world of one of the more famous people, tennis players in America.
Yes. So Serena Williams may be pregnant. So she did a little switcheroo on fans today, a little sneaky sneak peek into her life, where she posted a Snapchat of herself wearing a yellow bathing suit, and the caption was 20 weeks, which sparked all sorts of pregnancy rumors. Of course, Snapchat deletes right away, so she's not come out and confirmed it, but this would be her first child with her fiancé, Alexis Ohanian. He is the founder of Reddit, and they announced their engagement back in December. So if they are pregnant, congratulations to them. If not, she's got a lot of people buzzing about her today.
All right. Nicole Moschella, content editor for Rare.us. Thank you so much for being with us. Well, let's turn now to what's trending on social media. And for that, we're joined by VOA's Andrew Palchewski. Andrew, hey, what's going on? What's the talk?
On Sunday, we talked about this Facebook killer, this man in Ohio who shot and killed Robert Goodwin Sr.
Right.
On Facebook and put that video up on Facebook
right.
to spread around the internet. And now they're getting a response from CEO Mark Zuckerberg. He's mm-hmm. speaking at the F8 conference, the Facebook conference that happens every year. And he said, quote, "We have a lot more to do here. We're reminded of this week by the tragedy in Cleveland. Our hearts go out to the family and friends of Robert Goodwin Sr. And we have a lot of work. And we'll keep doing all we can to keep tragedies like this from happening." Now, Facebook was getting a lot of flack after this, not just because this was the medium on which this video appeared, but because they did not take it down quickly enough. Many people felt it was up there for too long.
Yeah.
The video was up for several hours before it was pulled. So Facebook's now going and going to institute some new policies that will prevent, hopefully, videos like this from going up there in the future. They're going to try to have different algorithms look at videos and pull them more quickly if they do appear to depict violence. So there is some policy change coming out of what is a just horrible story out of Cleveland, Ohio.
That's good that they're taking action so that we don't see any, you know, copycat sort of incidents where people think, oh, I can commit a horrific act and the world will see it.
Exactly. And this is the new age in which we live.
Yeah.
Everybody now
Social
has
media.
A smartphone in their pocket, and you can literally see through the eyes of
anyone. Information travels at the speed of light.
You can see what everyone is seeing, so that creates a whole new challenge for social media networks.
Anything else going on?
You know, there are sometimes these food items that become kind of cult classic. I can think of like the Shamrock Shake at McDonald's do around St. Patrick's Day.
Or right.
KFC did the Double Down, which was the sandwich made out of two pieces of fried chicken instead of bread. Well, Starbucks has now seized on this with hashtag Unicorn Frappuccino. They have released this drink. It's this pink-blue concoction that starts out pink, and then when you stir it together, it turns into kind of a purpley color. Lots of people talking about this on social media.
Sounds like real good health food.
Well, that's what a lot of people are talking about. It's loaded with sugar, mm-hmm. does not seem very healthy.
Yeah.
People talking about the taste, how it kind of changes tastes from sweet to sour. People are very intrigued by that. I saw a couple of videos that people did where they're taste testing it, and some of them really loved it, some of them did not. There was one video, in fact, where somebody just had their hand out in front of the camera and dropped it into the trash because they said it tasted horrible. So you're getting a lot of reaction to this, a lot of people participating online with that hashtag. Now, here's the reason why this is getting so much attention, not just because it's a unique drink. It is only available for 5 days at participating stores in the U.S., Canada, and Mexico. So this week is the week of the Unicorn Frappuccino. If you don't get it this week, so says Starbucks, you won't be able to get it. So people are rushing.
That's an intriguing marketing tool.
It is. People are rushing to Starbucks. It's kind of the cult classic. Have to put up the pictures on social media, of course, of everybody holding and trying the drink. And out of this has come another hashtag I saw someone use, which I love. Hashtag Frappmageddon. Because of the lines at Starbucks, everyone is rushing to Starbucks to get this drink, and the poor baristas at Starbucks are having to make these nonstop. So a lot of attention for the Unicorn Frappuccino. I have to say, it looks very cool. Mm-hmm. It photographs very well, and those pictures on social media make it look very appealing. But based on some of the comments I've read, I don't know that I'll want to try it for the health reasons and for also the taste.
All right. Well, I'm with you on that. Thanks so much, Andrew. You can follow him on Twitter at APAL. We also invite you to follow the International Edition stream at VOA_IE. Well, a new miniseries, Genius, looks at the turbulent and storied life of legendary physicist Albert Einstein. As VOA's David Byrd tells us, the 10-part series is National Geographic Television's first scripted dramatic series and stars Oscar winner Jeffrey Rush as the Nobel Prize winner.
Here is our traveling light beam. Now, I will ask you again. How can something light travel through nothing? Space.
It cannot, Herr Professor.
Cannot. Good. Therefore, if light is only a wave, then...
Space is not empty?
Exactly. So just as sound waves travel through air, light waves must travel through some sort of medium in space.
The series, directed in part by Ron Howard and based on Walter Isaacson's book about the legendary scientist, takes viewers from Einstein's youth at the Zurich Polytechnic to his escape from Nazi Germany and his time at Princeton. Jeffrey Rush and Emily Watson play the older Albert Einstein and his second wife and first cousin, Elsa. Rush says the cast hoped to give viewers a look into the whole of Einstein's personality and not just the scientific part of his life.
But as the series, as a drama, what it intends to do, I suppose, is look into what was he like when he was young, when he was a student, you know, and he was quite rebellious. And I did know that everyone thought he was a bit slow and a bit dopey as a student, but he was a daydreamer, and that became probably his greatest strength in adulthood.
Emily Watson says that the series shows how Einstein's refusal to conform to the rules was part of his genius.
If he'd had a conventional way of looking at life, we wouldn't have the theory of relativity. You know, and people kind of want it not to have worked or not to have been, you know, but actually they were great together. They were a really tight unit. They really operated in the world in a great way in some ways. I mean,
yes.
And they didn't have a sexual relationship for very long, but they were really a team.
The series marks the third time that Rush and Watson have played husband and wife. They were also in The Book Thief and The Life and Death of Peter Sellers. The two actors say their familiarity with one another helped them in the hurried world of a television production versus having more time on a film set.
There's a big crew, it's four cameras, you know, there are so many intrusions into that creative space. And if you already have your own sort of imaginary space between you in a way that you've already worked out how you do stuff, I felt that was a real bonus for us.
There's a nice, comfortable safety net. It becomes a more genuine collaboration. You're not working with a stranger.
Genius also stars Johnny Flynn as the young Albert Einstein, T.R. Knight as J. Edgar Hoover, Richard Topol as Fritz Haber, and Ralph Brown as Max Planck. It also stars Anya Buchstein as Russian spy Margarita Konenkova, with whom Einstein had a torrid affair when he was in his 60s. Genius airs on the National Geographic Channel beginning April 25th in the United States. In Washington, I'm David Byrd.
I'm James Butte, host of Daybreak Africa. Join me every weekday mornings at 3, 4, 5, and 6 hours UTC as we bring you the latest in African news, features, and sports. You can also be a part of the show through our listeners' mail segment. Just send your views to daybreakafrica@voanews.com or call us on 202-205-9942. That's Daybreak Africa, your breakfast show at 3, 4, 5, and 6 hours UTC on the Voice of America.
You've been listening to International Edition. That does it for today, but you can find us anytime at voanews.com. Thanks so much for joining us, and thanks to our director, Tracy Carter, and our engineer, Jimmy Cook. I'm Lori London in Washington. Have a wonderful day.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
The current serious deficit of trust between Russia and the United States, as well as the stated desire by both countries to improve relations, was recently on display in Moscow. U.S. Secretary of State Rex Tillerson and Russian Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov held a press conference after Secretary Tillerson met with Mr. Lavrov and Russian President Vladimir Putin. The world's two foremost nuclear powers cannot have this kind of relationship, Secretary Tillerson said. He and Russian leaders discussed approaches to improving channels of cooperation. Although Russia remains the most powerful ally of Syrian President Bashar al-Assad, who, Secretary Tillerson said, could be charged with war crimes for his actions against the Syrian people, both the United States and Russia recognize the importance of denying a safe haven in Syria for terrorists who want to attack both of our countries. Mr. Tillerson said he and Mr. Lavrov also believe in a unified and stable Syria, and both are open to further discussion of possible political solutions to the Syrian conflict. However, Secretary Tillerson reiterated the U.S. position that the Syrian regime planned and executed the April 4th chemical weapons attack at Khan Sheikhoun on April 4th. And during their talks, the secretary did not agree to a Russian proposal to create a new investigative mechanism to address the Syrian chemical weapons attack. The United States believes that the Organization for the Prohibition of Chemical Weapons and the United Nations already have existing and effective mechanisms in place to address chemical weapons allegations in Syria. On North Korea, the United States and Russia agreed that the DPRK has to be denuclearized, and the two sides discussed the constructive role Russia can play in encouraging the regime in North Korea to change its course. Regarding Ukraine, Secretary Tillerson urged Russia to fully implement the Minsk agreements by de-escalating violence and taking steps to withdraw separatist armed forces and heavy weapons so that OSCE observers can fulfill their role. Until full progress is made under the Minsk agreements, he said, the situation in Ukraine will remain an obstacle to improvement in relations between the U.S. and Russia. The U.S. and Russia agreed to establish a working group aimed at stabilizing their fraying relationship. We need to attempt to put an end to this steady degradation, Secretary of State Tillerson said, which is doing nothing to make progress on the issues of the greatest importance to both of us.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
is